more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. We did that so well.
I am always surprised, and I shouldn't be, at the pride that you take in our ability to say our names.
But it's not saying our names, it's that we say them in harmony together.
I don't know that there was any harmony involved. There was definitely speaking.
Well, I think it was
harmonious. There were no harmonics. I don't think we...
I mean, it's just as amazing as the fact that we were agreeing with each other during the entire first hour.
I don't know. I think that happens a little less often.
Less rarely, more so.
Yes.
Moreover.
Our names being said together happens more regularly.
Yeah, twice a week on this show. I'm just always amazed when we get it right. I mean, we start right off and do something, and we get it all timing right.
Yeah.
How many years? 10, 15 years or something like that it took us to practice?
14 years, yeah.
And what do you get?
Another day older and deeper in debt.
There you go. All right. Anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. And the telephone numbers to call in here if you have any questions, thoughts, comments, or something of that nature to do with the economy, investing, something like that. 773-1400 if you're in East Bell County. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400. We were asked to
anywhere else within the sound of your voice.
That's true. If you're in my voice, in the sound of my voice, you
can hear
use
voice,
that number.
Right.
Yes. We were asked at the end of last hour to explain about our theme music a bit. And that's the St. Thomas Episcopal High School marching band.
Piping band.
What was the year?
Oh, I don't know. 2000-something. I don't have the original CD anymore. I had to...
Because it broke.
And they don't... It's out of print. And they just...
They were...
That was the year, the second year that they won the World Championship in Scotland.
Yes.
And unfortunately, that particular... It's called In Memoriam, and I've looked really, really hard to try to get another copy of it. What I'm actually playing here is something that I burned off of the copy that I saved on my computer.
It's actually
the one that I burned for you because
I made a copy of the one before it broke just so that we had it, and now you put it on your computer. And
there's even a couple of pieces on there that didn't copyright.
Yeah, so anyway, it's a copy of a copy of a copy.
If anybody has a copy of In Memoriam and you would like to sell it to me, I'd love to have it. You can give us a call during the week at 947-1111. I'd love to buy it from you. We did have somebody who got what they thought was a copy of it,
and
gave it to me, and it turned out it was a database disk from some program. Somebody, I don't know.
Yeah, very strange. Anyway. It may have come from the high school, and maybe we had the grading records of all of the students of that year.
Could be. I didn't.
No idea.
As soon as I realized it was in a database, I decided not to look at the data. We have a caller on 773-1400. You are on the air with Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
I got a question about our borrowing and interest rates. I mean, right now we're borrowing like 40 cents on the dollar of our budget. How long can we keep this up, and what is your prediction on that in revenue? And, I mean, we're on a collision course with insolvency.
We might be.
Are you talking about your company, or are you talking about our government?
Our government.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. I was going to say, you probably shouldn't be doing that. You know?
Yeah, I would recommend that if you have a household.
Oh, if it's the government, that's fine. They're able to do it. That's no problem. And your company, no, you shouldn't do that. No.
No, I'm not AI.
Okay. Let me simply say that... it's happening across the world, and there's some pretty. It's a complex, complex issue. Borrowing 40 cents of every dollar that we spend is obviously not sustainable. And that is difficult. The reality is, though, we're not actually borrowing 40 cents of every dollar.
It just looks like it.
Very, very complex at the higher levels when we look at this, because part of that debt that we're incurring is an estimate of the present value of what it will cost to fund things like Medicare and Social Security out into the future.
Yeah.
And these things are, there's two issues to that 40 cents on the dollar that are pretty important. One is the lower the current interest rate is, the bigger that number becomes when it's calculated and put on books. In other words, if the going interest rates for the federal midterm debt level, which is around 2%, a little below 2%, which they are today, the amount of money we technically should be putting into a Social Security trust fund or into a Medicare trust fund or something like that is twice as much, roughly, this is not exact, but roughly twice as much as if interest rates were at 4%, which is far more normal. So that's part of the problem. The other, and of course, the other side of that part that we're not really borrowing is, yeah, we're probably going to have to fund that, but I can also tell you it ain't going to happen. We're going to change the way we pay for these things down the road, and the government will wind up paying less. So it, first off, it's not as bad as it looks. Secondly, we have been in a recession. We need to wean ourselves off of this gradually and get out of the business of borrowing this much money. But it's not catastrophic at this point.
Yeah, let me address it from a global level rather than a national level. And the first thing I'll say is that all of the originators of the major economic schools were in agreement on a couple of things. And those things are, in down economic times, you don't cut spending and you don't raise taxes. You just don't do it. And I don't care if you are right-wing or left-wing, if you're in the economic world, all of the major economic schools believe the same thing. The government shouldn't stop spending or raise taxes when the economy is down. And a very clear example of what happens if you do that, if you raise taxes and cut spending in the middle of a recession, just look at Europe right now. Great Britain, who has probably been on the back edge of raising taxes and the back edge of cutting spending, they've done it a lot less than the rest of Europe, is looking at a triple-dip recession right now. They've just had another quarter of GDP negative growth, which just means shrinkage. They have gone backwards. That's the idea behind what a recession is. We have not. Greece is in a massive depression, and that's because
Spain, yeah.
And Greece and Spain and Italy, Italy is in a recession. All of them took on these austerity programs where they cut everything back. And at the beginning, when they said, okay, this is all the austerity that we're going to need to do because that'll balance our budget out, we'll just do this much. Well, they did that much, and it caused, because people got less money from the government, it caused them to spend less money, which caused the entire economy to go downhill, which caused tax revenue to go down, which meant that the government got less money and they had to do more austerity to make it balanced. And it was this, it's gone and gone and gone. What the major schools of economic thought agree on is you wait till the economy is doing well before raising taxes and cutting spending. So putting that in perspective, one, first off, I do not believe that we are in great shape in the government by borrowing the amount that we're borrowing. I don't think any rational person thinks that we should just keep doing this for the rest of time. But looking at when you should borrow money, if you're getting a house refinanced, is it better to do it when interest rates are at 8% or when interest rates are at 3%? Well, if you're going to finance the money anyway, you might as well do it at 3%. It's a lot less expensive than doing it at 8%.
Right.
If the government is going to be spending the money and borrowing the money, now's the time to do it. I'm not saying it's a great idea long term, but if you think about the same reason why, you know, I was being facetious a little bit, the caller called and said, we're borrowing 40 cents for every dollar, all that. And I said, if it's your company, you shouldn't be doing that, except that if you have some major investments that you want to do in your company and you borrow 40 cents for every dollar that you spend at a 2% interest rate that you don't have to pay back for 30 years, and you don't do it every year for the next 30 years, then they call you really brilliant. because you got money at a very, very inexpensive way that's probably less than inflation's going to be over a long period of time into the future. By anybody's estimate, 30 years from now, I expect, and most economists expect, to have about a 2.5% inflation rate. If the government can borrow interest at 2%, can borrow money at 2% over a 30-year period when we expect inflation to be 2.5%, what they're really doing is we are paying them to borrow money from us. That's kind of smart. And it's pretty rare for me to say that the government is smart. I think they did it completely unintentionally, but that's what's going on here, as long as we can bring spending down in the future.
Yeah, and there's a very, very good article, by the way, in Barron's, the one that's out today, by, what's his name, Epstein?
Gene
Epstein, or Epstein. I don't know which way it's pronounced. And he talks about the fact that, and he's generally pretty conservative, and he said that Paul Ryan was on a talk show recently, and he simply said, if we can cut real spending by 1% a year over the next 10 years, it will be a powerful move that will bring our budgetary situation under control. And that sounds really strange. 1% real cut, though, means, let's just say we had 3% inflation in a year. That means that typically the spending will go up 3% just to keep up with inflation on everything in the government. So if a real cut in this case would be effectively, first off, we don't raise it with inflation. And secondly, we cut 1 more percent. That's equivalent of 4% a year. That would be very significant. Now, if we were to go in and do the kind of cuts that were envisioned in several budget proposals out of the House, and I'm not saying that they took that these proposals were serious. They weren't even voted on in the Senate because they were not serious. They were sort of demonstrations. If we did the sequestration, for example, it would probably put us into recession. Yeah. I know Senator McCain just said that today, that it would be devastating if we do the sequestration. Well, that's not a huge cut, but it's big enough.
Here's a complete,
that it would cripple us.
Very, very clear. You've mentioned this in the past, but very, very clear example of that. Bell County would go into recession without a doubt.
Well, we'd probably be closer to depression.
Yeah, if the defense cuts at the level that they were talked about, which isn't a huge amount of defense cut, except that it would be concentrated around the places where defense spending happens. It's not spread across the entire economy. It's concentrated into areas like Bell County.
But what we need is the ability to sit down and work out some comprehensive changes, most of which, I'll warn you folks, are not going to be popular. And the issue is that if everybody suffers equally and you're willing to suffer and you're not, and you don't listen to the demagoguery that says that they are having death panels and the other silliness that comes up every time there's an attempt to cut entitlement programs, somebody will try to lie to you about it and get you angry about it. And we get the government we deserve. We're in a democracy.
Yeah. The Ryan plan, that was the budget passed by the House of Representatives in Congress last year. It was not passed by the Senate.
Right.
The Ryan plan made a lot of what the Democrats called draconian cuts to entitlements. I don't know any other way to make those entitlements work for a long time. You have to make some cuts. You have to either, if the cut is in the age at which people start receiving Social Security and Medicaid, or Medicare, or in the amount of income somebody makes before they start getting phased out of Social Security or Medicare. Those are the type of things that have to happen. One of the great, great pieces of respect that I have for Paul Ryan, there's some things that I disagree with him about, but he is willing to come out publicly and make some decisions about spending in the government that does not make him popular, and he just happened to do it at a time when there are enough people around that said, "Yeah, we need to make these cuts." So he became popular, but they call it the third rail of politics, any entitlement touching, And it's true, you know, because it ends the career of the people that talk about cutting back on Social Security or Medicare.
And I recommend that the Wall Street Journal has an app that you can go to online.
I haven't been able to find it by Googling. I was playing with it a couple of weeks ago, but I haven't found it again.
Whether or not they've still got it up, they did have it up. And I sat down and played with it a little bit and figured out the kind of cuts that we need to bring things under control. And I'll tell you, folks, that means that we have to cut Social Security. We have to cut Medicare payments.
Raise the retirement age to 70.
And this is one of those strange things, and a lot of folks who are listening to this are not going to like what I'm about to tell you. If you eliminate Obamacare, the deficit soars out of sight.
And that is directly attributable to two things, but one major, major event. The spending on prescription drugs for Medicare.
Yeah. Which,
that prescription drug plan that was passed with unilateral support, and both the Democrats and the Republicans were on board.
Bipartisan support,
it was,
you mean bipartisan.
I mean unilateral. It was
unilateral,
so much,
means only one side, but you mean bipartisan support.
By unilateral, I mean the entire Congress thought it was a great idea. It was not a party bipartisan thing. It was complete support from both sides.
Yeah,
there were just a couple of people. Ron Paul was saying, this is dumb. I agreed with him at the time, I think.
It was a legitimate issue. The problem is, we wanted the benefit. We wanted to say that if you're older and there's an expensive drug that you need,
then
you shouldn't have to choose between eating and getting your medication. But I can also tell you that if we're going to pass that kind of a bill, responsibility says raise some taxes to cover it.
We didn't do it. If you're a business owner, we are, and we decide to get a...
We own a business?
Oh, yes, we do.
Oh.
If we decide to get a more comprehensive health plan for our employees, because it will make us popular with our employees, and they will want to stay and work with us. If we want to get a more comprehensive thing, our bill for that is going to go up. If we decide we're not going to spend that money, we've got a call coming in.
Oh, okay.
If we decide we're not going to spend that money, we got to spend it on credit cards. You know, when we agree to do it, we agreed to do it. And that's what's going on here. We've got a Congress that's willing to give us benefits but not willing to take the benefits away when we can't afford it. And that's a problem. That's something that we're going to have to deal with in the future.
And by the way, I do think we will deal with it. At least I hope we will deal with it. But it's not an easy thing, and don't think that somehow you can get somebody else to fix the problem. Folks, the bottom line to it is, generally speaking, we need to pay a little more taxes, and we are already. That's already starting. And generally speaking, you need to expect less from the government. That's just a reality.
Just one final thing here. Even the most right-wing people that I speak to today, most of them, by the way, are getting retirement pensions from the government. Some of the most right-wing people that I know are getting military retirement. I am all for their military retirement. Don't get me wrong here. People start saying, you're trying to get rid of military retirement. No. But if you look at the benefits paid by corporations in the United States, you'll notice that they have moved away from giving a pension and move towards a 401k concept. And the thing that brought down General Motors, the thing that brought down Chrysler, was its entitlement programs. And military retirement is an entitlement. It is paid into, and it is a contractual obligation. So is Social Security, so is Medicare.
Military retirement is actually not a contractual obligation.
It's a contractual obligation at the minor contract level. All it takes is an act of Congress to make it go away.
Right.
Just like Medicare, just like Social Security.
We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to give a brief example of how I think idiotic and upside down some of these rules and regulations are. I did not take Social Security until I was 69 and a half. I thought I was doing society and the government, everybody else a favor,
sure,
by not drawing Social Security, leaving it in there, because, you know, society needs the money.
Right.
Well, I saved the society or whoever it is $50-some-odd thousand, and guess what? Now they penalized me 40% on Medicare because I didn't retire at 65 instead of 69 and a half.
They did?
Where is the reward
That's a new one to me.
To work and produce.
I got to research that. I was unaware that they were going to penalize you on Medicare.
Yeah.
They penalized me 40% additional on Medicare because I did not retire at 65. I waited until I was 69 and a half.
No, did you take Medicare at 65?
Do what now?
Did you take Medicare at 65?
No, I didn't take anything.
Okay.
Draw any money from the government until I was 69 and a half.
Yeah, well.
And instead of saying, go get them, boy, you done good, they penalize you.
Well,
that's a Plan B penalty that starts ticking after you've,
there is a requirement to start Medicare at age 65, whether you're retired or not. And if you don't, there is a penalty. You're right.
And strangely enough, this is a really strange one. The logic behind that is what they're saying is that if they can do preventative care starting at age 65, they're going to spend less on you later on. That's not the way it actually works out, but that's what their logic was behind it.
Yeah, Medicare is a different animal than Social Security.
Well, I'm overly complicating it. To me, it is complicated, and it doesn't make sense.
You're right.
I'm just an old, simple country boy that don't understand things
and
like that.
I completely...
I'm just saying, you take that problem and extend it times 10,000, and that's the kind of problem that our government puts down on us. Regulation and idiotic stuff.
Right.
So let me turn loose and let you discuss it.
But thank you very much. There's a lot of this stuff that, and I want to say something to you. There's a lot of this stuff that makes sense, and I want everybody to hear this. The government has regulations regarding Medicare and Social Security, and ignore them at your own risk, folks.
Yeah.
You can't just casually roll into that thing. It's kind of like, if you buy health insurance, you sure better read and understand the policy. Otherwise, you may wind up in a position where you're not covered for something that you should be covered for.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling.
Part B is what the penalty is, and you get a 10% penalty each year that you delay signing up for Medicare Part B. The only exception to that is if you are in a company healthcare plan already, and then you get an 8-month delay, but you have to sign up, otherwise you start getting that penalty.
Actually, boy, I tell you, I've studied this and I understand it, but it's sure hard to explain it because it seems counterintuitive.
Yeah,
insurance theory, which is the way insurance works, has proven to be very, very successful in working things out, and when it's violated, even if it's common sense to violate it. The common sense causes a lot of problems, and that's one of the reasons that the universal health care requirement under Obamacare is in place. If everybody gets insurance, and it's predictable that everybody will get insurance at a certain time, then the overall cost of insurance, this is insurance theory,
it goes down,
and that means that everybody pays less. So if you wait, for example, and this is the reason for that Part B penalty, if you wait until you get sick to start paying, because you're paying for Medicare, if you actually have a premium, if you wait until you get sick to start paying for it, you put a problem in the system, and I understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, and this is the case, and when we talk about Obamacare as opposed to the single-payer system, Obamacare is a lot better concept because it's private insurance that's doing this, and there's still some major issues with it, but at least it's private insurance that we're talking about doing this, and it's to some extent private health care. So even that area gets into a spot that's hard to... The final piece here, and I wanted to say this, we as a society have agreed to some form of socialism. We have. We as a whole. I mean, you and I pay in, all of us pay into Social Security. Well, we recognize that right now the amount that's being paid into Social Security isn't quite enough to pay for all the Social Security benefits. Well, there's this loans that the government's been paying to or writing to itself to say once Social Security comes due, the stuff that we've collected for Social Security that we've actually been spending on other things, we're going to owe ourselves that. Well, now it's coming due. That's just barely started to happen. We're collecting a little bit less Social Security taxes than we're paying out. Although that just blipped, that's probably going to jump back up to be, we're going to be in surplus again this year. It was the tax cuts, the temporary tax cuts for 2 years that put us into the red. So we may have another couple of years where we have a surplus coming in from Social Security. This is important. We have agreed that we don't want to see our elderly citizens starving to death. And people say, well, Jake, you're being too extreme there. No, I'm not. When Social Security was brought out, it was because during the Great Depression and just before it, we had people that were retirees that didn't have any method of making any money that were dying of starvation in our country. We said we don't want that. Somehow that's turned into a retirement plan for everybody. Well, if it's a retirement plan for everybody, we've got to run it like corporations run retirements now, not like a pension that brought down General Motors and Chrysler and everything else. Or we have to recognize that it's not really a pension. It's a tax that we pay so that some people will get money back. And I have made a decision in my own life and a lot of people that I speak to, successful younger to middle-aged people, middle-aged being 40-ish, not middle-aged being 50-ish, although that's kind of where the line is drawn, that people think we're not going to get Social Security. It's not going to happen. We're going to keep paying into Social Security, but I don't think I'm ever going to get Social Security. And I expect when I am retired, I will be in a place where I won't need Social Security. So I'm okay with that. But it's something that I have to say, this is a tax. I'm not paying into a retirement program. And this letter that I get every year saying this is how much I'm getting back, I just write lie all over the front of it, put it away somewhere else, and chuckle a little bit to myself about how the government is calling this my retirement when it isn't. But I also recognize that if I am completely disabled at some point in the near future, unable to continue working in any way, there's a safety net. Social Security will turn around and start paying me money back because I paid into Social Security. That's pretty cool. That's in my mind, if you think of it as insurance, and that's what it is. It's retirement insurance, and it's disability insurance.
We need a break for some commercials, and I've got some things I'd like to talk about on the other side.
Sounds good.
And this is the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone number is in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we'll be back after these very important words from KTEM's sponsors. And we're back with the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And that long silence in there was because it was a commercial that's supposed to play.
It's a 30-second commercial that will only play for 0 seconds.
Yeah, it's the computer here has said it's gonna, and it played it. It played it for exactly 0 seconds.
Yeah, I think that is an amazing use of money. If you can get a commercial that's 0 seconds long, it's just bam, it's done, it's over, everybody gets the message.
What I want to know is what they charged Cleo Bayana for a zero-second commercial. Anyway, that all beside the point. I wanted to talk about a couple of things that I saw. Barron's News Magazine, which looks amazingly like a newspaper if you get it in print this week, is one of the better ones I've ever seen. Alan Abelson, who does Up and Down Wall Street, who never has a positive thing to say about much of anything in my experience, was positive.
Now, that's not a good thing.
Well, it is. He basically is criticizing the doomsayers who continue to say that the market price is too high and the economy is going to crash and the European zone is going to go. And he said basically the market is ignoring them. And he said, if you if you have a choice between believing the soothsayers and believing the market, you probably ought to believe the market. And he kind of couches that a little bit. But there's some other articles in there that I think are very, very well written, very well balanced this time. I was really pleasantly surprised. There's an article in there called "The Next Manufacturing Boom Will Be Ours." And it goes into basically a forecast of the United States entering into an economic boom as we move forward in the 21st century. We're basically going to run off and leave everybody else behind. And the nice thing about it is I agree with it. I mean, yeah, I went through and read
I'm in agreement as well.
One of the key elements is the price of natural gas in the United States. Natural gas is very, very hard to transport over long distances once you don't have a pipeline, like across oceans. The cost of natural gas in the United States is $3.55 per million British thermal units, BTUs. Now, in Europe, it's $12. It's $16 in Japan, and it's about the same in China. We have the ability to generate electric power, to run our factories, and to do a lot of things in the United States at a fraction of the energy cost that the rest of the world is seeing. Then it gets better. You know, people who complain about the shift from manufacturing, get this. Graduates from the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology. I'm sure you've all heard of that famous school. The acceptance rate, by the way, there is 88%, which means if you can read, you can get in. Okay? The mascot is Grubby the Miner.
Yeah.
They command a median starting salary that's 16% higher than a Yale graduate.
Wow.
Now, folks, that warms the cockles of my heart. Something really interesting happened this week, too. Apple is no longer the highest capitalized
largest company. That's the most valuable company is now Exxon again.
Is now Exxon. Well, Exxon actually produces something that makes everything else work. And I'm not knocking Apple, but I'm saying that we have a phenomenal infrastructure in place in the United States. People are worried about China overtaking us. Folks, don't worry about it. China is a net importer of almost everything, and it's going to get a lot worse. All the raw materials. All of the major accurate forecasters whose real job is on the line, the people like Exxon and folks like that, are saying that by 2020, we will be energy independent by 2025, and these are conservative estimates, we will be the largest energy exporter on the planet. Did you get that? I mean, they know where these are because of the technology, but it's not just the technology. Europe is not going to support fracking. They've already decided, and even if they were going to support it, there's not enough place to do it. We happen to be ideally situated in the United States of America, where we have these phenomenal petroleum reserves that are now available to us. We have the infrastructure to move it around. We have the resources to get it out of the ground. We have the technology. We have everything we need to make that happen. And here's what else is happening. Have you heard about outsourcing?
Mm-hmm. It's coming back.
Well, what are they calling it now when they bring the, there's a word there and I
can't add it. Insourcing.
Well, it's not insourcing, but it's jobs are coming back to the United States. Now there won't be as many jobs come back as left because computers have replaced a lot of people. But company after company after company, but Ford, General Motors, Exxon, you name the company, they are moving their operations that were previously overseas back to the United States. And, this is better, Samsung, Toyota, a lot of companies that we've thought of as our major international competitors are moving
their factories here.
Their factories here. Here's the interesting point. You can buy land for a factory and you manufacture something less expensively right now in Tennessee than you can in China.
Yeah, I'm about to make this move up a couple of notches here. And we're going to look ahead about a decade and a half.
Wow.
Yeah.
How far out? What year? What year is this?
We're this year or the decade and a half from
Decade and a half.
We're talking about 2028.
In the year 2028.
Okay. So one of the technologies that's looked at as a silliness right now, that it's a toy, very similarly to the computer of about two decades ago, is 3D printing. And 3D printing, people say, well, how can I get on? This is a new technology. How can I get in on the ground floor? And I have to warn you, if you think about computers a couple of decades ago, you didn't want to get in on the ground floor.
No, most
of the ones
go
that
to
start,
Radio Shack.
Yeah, the ones that got in on the ground floor lost everything. 3D printing is, for the future, what computers were 2.5 decades ago. And I mean that in a way that I can't even begin to describe the abilities that we will have when the technology is better. Right now, it is a toy. You can't manufacture anything quickly. However, to cover all of the new technology that is coming up, and I'll start very quickly, vatted meat. Are you familiar with this?
Right.
It's very expensive to make right now because it's made in sheets. It's basically you take the stem cells from a cow and you can make beef with it. But it's only in very, very thin sheets. So to get it to stack, you lose all of the texture of meat. It doesn't taste like meat if the texture's not there. So in order to stack it, you get this weird firm stuff. And so they're layering fat and meat.
I know exactly what it is. It's spam.
It's spam. It's not even spam. It's firmer than spam. And
The
flavor's not there. Okay.
And if you put enough salt in, it's spam.
It's spam. Yeah. All right. What they're doing is, in the future, what they will be doing right now, what they're beginning to do is they're using 3D printing to make it larger than one sheet thick. They're using 3D printing to create automobile parts in very small form out of metal. Right now, this is the beginning of the technology. It's way too... if we made a transmission for a vehicle out of a 3D printing press, it would be about $4 million for a transmission. Right now, that is not feasible. We look at that and go, oh, yeah.
Wait,
and it takes
a
long time.
Wait a minute. The Air Force would buy one of those
That's how they get all of their toilets. They buy $4 million transmissions and put them in the plumbing system. And
right, that's it.
That's all their toilets, yes. But in the future, when the technology is better, when we can produce custom whatever in a very short period of time, whether it be meat, whether it be a car part or a computer part or something on a very, very small scale or a very big scale, the leading technology in that is right here. If you think of all of the manufacturing jobs that we sent overseas because it doesn't take an education to turn a screwdriver, it doesn't take an education to push a rivet gun into something. If we're 3D printing it, it's going to be happening here. We will have cheap power. We will have cheap land. We will have the ability to create whatever we want and ship it wherever we want it, and it will be happening right here.
And there's another element here, too.
So all those manufacturing jobs are coming back here. There's going to be fewer of them because you just hit a button somewhere and it makes the thing. But
and
anyway, there's another element.
And it will require people to be educated.
Very educated.
If you want to have something... get an education where the requirement is to learn how to learn math, learn English, learn how to think.
Yep.
I know as an employer, those are the three things. If I had somebody walk in today, even though we don't have a job opening, and was interested in taking a new job, and they could immediately demonstrate their ability to handle a computer, I'd really understand math and how to think, man, that would be so wonderful. But there's just not a lot of folks like that because people are not interested in doing the hard work and learning. But here's the key. We have in the United States a tremendous capacity. For example, our ports on the east and west and third coast down in the Gulf.
I thought you meant on the computer. I got all these ports on my computer,
too. Well, the ports that we have on the ocean operate at about 54% capacity. Now, let's make a little comparison here. Europe's operated about 60%. 67% in Latin America, and 76% in Southeast Asia. What that means is we have the ability to double our exports and imports
without
building a new port. And that is, we have a phenomenal railroad system. But those are kind of the icing on the cake. The real core reason that we're going to dominate.
Absolutely core.
Is demographics.
Well, I think.
We are still growing as a nation.
Yeah.
We are improving as a nation. We are raising our productivity as a nation. And unfortunately for them, not only is China out of raw materials and having to import raw materials using dollars to buy them, by the way.
Their demographics are upside down.
But they just aren't having kids. And yeah. Europe is just not having kids. And yeah. in the end, the United States of America is going to dominate the 21st century in a way that even those of us who are optimistic, I think, are going to be astonished.
There's an immediate argument that people spring to mind and they say, what about India? And this is the final piece of the puzzle that comes together. Yes, India has a demographic that is correct. It is growing. It is mm-hmm. having lots of kids. Mm-hmm. They're getting a lot of educations. The final piece of the puzzle, and it's a big piece, it completes the rest of the puzzle, is something we take for granted here, intellectual property rights.
Absolutely.
If we invent something, we get to profit from it. If somebody steals it from us, that's what big lawsuits are about. If you look at all the times in the last 50 years that big companies have been sued for hundreds of millions of dollars because they stole somebody's idea, we have the strongest intellectual property rights of any country in the world because we want to give the people that are innovative and creative the ability to make a living doing that. If you go anywhere else in the world, but most specifically, if you go to India and you have an invention, you don't get to make any money from that because the first person that sees it copies it. And that doesn't work. It means that you don't make new inventions. It's the same concept of what destroyed the Soviet Union. There was no reason why you wanted to go to work. Here, there's no reason, or in India, there's no reason why you would want to innovate because you don't get to keep it. You don't get anything bigger than a mom-and-pop store if you do something that would have created an Apple technology here. This is a massive piece of our puzzle. We have the ability to expand, we have good demographics, and we have intellectual property rights. So anybody that thinks that we have massive threats overseas, militarily, I think there's nobody that can come close to us. There are some threats, but there's nobody that comes anywhere close to us. Intellectually, yes, there are a lot of very smart people out there, but they don't get to keep what they think. That concept, I mean, if you think of the country with the highest population of English speakers in the world is China. They have about 500 million people that speak English fluently. That's 200 million more people than exist in our country. We only have 310 million. They have 500 million that speak English fluently. And yet, they will not pass us up intellectually until they get to keep what they invent. And that's not going to happen.
And I want to throw another little piece of good news in here. Earnings this quarter... Earnings actually from the fourth quarter of last year were expected to be down. And warning after warning that was that we had unusual growth in the third quarter of 2012. For those of you who haven't tracked this, our annual GDP rate in the third quarter is up 3.1%. And there's this assumption that, okay, that was a surge and we're going to kind of sag in the fourth quarter. We don't know what those answers are going to be yet. It takes the Commerce Department a while to work that out. But there's a core place, there's some core places we can look. And even though the GDP is a little bit esoteric, Procter & Gamble is the first place I go to look to see what's going on.
Yeah, it's a great bellwether.
And let me simply say that last year, for the 3 months ending in December, they had net income of $4.1 billion at Procter & Gamble. Okay, that's a nice number, but it doesn't mean anything until you look back 1 year earlier. 2011, fourth quarter, $1.7 billion dollars for the quarter. That is
to 1.7 back then. What was it again?
It went from 1.7 in 2011 to 4.1 in the fourth quarter of 2012.
Why is that even? We're more than doubling. Why is that a big deal? I don't know.
It is a huge thing because what they sell, there's very little that you buy from Procter & Gamble that is kind of entertainment purchase or anything like this. This is where people are going in and buying Tide and Crest and Gillette shaving products and Pampers. People have stopped penny pinching in the basics and have gone back and you can just see this. I mean, it's not like the babies are using fewer diapers. What they're doing is people are moving upscale to a better level of diaper, to a better level of laundry detergent. This is a powerful suggestion. This is a powerful indicator that we are either back to normal or getting back to normal very quickly. Now, this happens at the same time that the S&P 500 stock index and the Dow Jones Industrial Average get back up very close, and I expect to see them go well above it, back up to the levels, the record levels they had in 2007. We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
My local newspaper says there's a person with a similar name to you, and she's got a list of credits as long as an adult's arm.
Right.
I was wondering if she's related to you.
She has the same last name?
She is. Is it worth my while to go listen to her speak?
Yes.
Let me know how she put up with it for 40 years.
Well, actually, 42 years she's put up with me and my wife and this other guy's mother.
She hasn't put up with me anywhere that long.
Chaplain.
She's only put up with me for about 37 years and give or take 9 months.
Yeah, she's speaking to the Association of Professional Women in Salado, I think it is. And, yeah, I don't know what she's going to talk about, but whatever it is, it's going to be worth listening to. I guarantee it.
Yeah. He has to say that because he's learned wisdom over time, and if he decided that anything she said isn't worth listening to, he would be shorter by about a head.
That is not a true statement. I am privileged.
She's got to be a saint.
I am privileged to listen to her every evening, and it is an honor.
Yes.
Okay.
So, thanks for the call. Yes.
Yeah, well,
I didn't realize she was speaking. When is she doing that?
I found out when I got the paper and read it yesterday. So
when is the speech?
Sometime this coming week, and I don't know when. It's in the Salado paper, but it's the Association of Professional Business Women or something like that.
See, that's the way I feel about my wife. I have to look in the newspaper to find out what our schedule is.
She's pretty amazing, to say the least. That's kind of an understatement. She's a board-certified chaplain, and she's also the manager of volunteer services and spiritual care at Scott & White Round Rock. So,
And she does have a set of credentials longer than mine. Just letters that keep going on and on and on.
And she's pretty amazing, to say the least. Okay.
She should have the alphabet back there pretty soon.
Pretty good. You know, you're really successful in academics and professional career areas when the letters
behind,
after your name exceed the letters in your name. She's got more degrees than I do, I'll tell you that. Okay. Anyway, you're listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we're out of time for today. The Personal Wealth Coach is an SEC-registered investment advisory firm. We manage investment portfolios for people who have enough money that it's important to them.
That sounds reasonable.
Like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you would like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail sitting around waiting for no one else but you. Locally, you can call 947-1111, or you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. Or you can reach us on this newfangled technology, the Internet. You can email us at Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com, or you can go to thepersonalwealthcoach.com. We've got podcasts that will be there coming up soon. So until next week, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood, the best talk in America. News Radio 1400 KTEM.